Greetings. This is Brother Steve with the Fountain of Life Daily Inspiration. I will be doing the inspirations this week, starting this morning. And I'm going to be teaching Bible school at a local Mennonite church this week. So what I'll be talking about this week will be a little bit of an overflow from my studies for Bible school. I'm going to be speaking of God and God's holiness, His purity. And if anybody has any questions, I can be reached at 717-842-0890. Just for a little bit of a meditation this morning, I'm not going to go into a lot of depth, but I'm going to read a little bit out of the book here that I've been reading and studying, The Knowledge of the Holy by A.W. Tozer. And I'm going to read from the preface of this book, just a few paragraphs and maybe a little bit of the first chapter, and then make a few comments as we go. The message of this book does not grow out of these times, but it is appropriate to them. It is called forth by a condition which has existed in the church for some years and is steadily growing worse. I refer to the loss of the concept of majesty from the popular religious mind. The church has surrendered her once lofty concept of God and has substituted for it one so low, so ignoble, as to be utterly unworthy of thinking, worshiping men. This she has done, not deliberately, but little by little, and without her knowledge, and her very unawareness only makes her situation all the more tragic. The low view of God entertained almost universally among Christians is the cause of 100 lesser evils everywhere among us. A whole new philosophy of Christian life has resulted from this. From this one basic error in our religious thinking. With our loss of the sense of majesty has come the further loss of religious awe and consciousness of the divine presence. We have lost our spirit of worship and our ability to withdraw inwardly to meet God in adoring silence. Modern Christianity is simply not producing the kind of Christian who can appreciate or experience the life in the spirit. The words, "Be still and know that I am God," mean next to nothing to the self-confidence bustling worshiper in this middle period of the 20th century. This loss of the concept of majesty has come just when the forces of religion are making dramatic gains and the churches are more prosperous than at any time within the past several hundred years. But the alarming thing is that our gains are mostly external and our losses wholly internal, and since it is the quality of our religion that is affected by internal conditions, it may be that our supposed gains are but losses spread over a wider field. And just want to make a little note here, this book was actually written about, I believe about 50, maybe almost 60 years ago, so add another 60 years to the dates and times there. The only way to recoup our spiritual losses is to go back to the cause of them, and make such corrections as the truth warrants. The decline of the knowledge of the holy has brought on our troubles. A rediscovery of the majesty of God will go a long way towards curing them. It is impossible to keep our moral practices sound and our inward attitudes right while our idea of God is erroneous or inadequate. If we would bring back spiritual power to our lives, we must begin to think of God more nearly as he is. And, you know, I don't know what all the causes are of this dilemma that he's speaking of in the church. I think there's a lot of things that play into that. One of them, probably a very major factor, is just modern media and the access to all kinds of, entertainment at the tip of our fingers. We no longer have to travel anywhere to go to the theater or the music opera or whatever, we can get it right at our fingertips, and there is such a lack of meditation in our lives. Another factor that I believe, and some of this may have been brought on by the media or by the actors, Hollywood and whoever, is the words that in the past were reserved for describing God have been so thrown around and so brought down to a low place that there is hardly any word in the English language anymore that really describes God properly based on how the word is used today. For example, the word awesome to me is a word that belongs only to God. God alone is awesome, and basically the word awesome has the idea in there of awe. It's awe-inspiring. It's something that we look at and it makes us look on it as and in awe. And you know, when we use a word like that, as in awesome, you know, we had an awesome time, or we had an awesome meal, an awesome pizza, or whatever, it brings that word down so low to where it just simply doesn't carry the weight anymore that belongs to a word describing God. And so I think that's another major factor in why we have such a low view of God and why we don't see God in his majestic form anymore. And I'm sure there's many other factors as well, but I think those are two main factors that play into that mindset. I'm going to read also a little bit of chapter one of this same book, a few paragraphs here. Okay, starting the beginning of chapter one of the same book I talked about, The Knowledge of the Holy by A.W. Tozer. What comes into our minds when we think about God is the most important thing about us. The history of mankind will probably show that no people has ever risen above its religion, and man's spiritual history will positively demonstrate that no religion has ever been greater than its idea of God. Worship is pure or base as the worshiper entertains high or low thoughts of God. For this reason, the gravest question before the church is always God himself, and the most pretentious fact about any man is not what he at any given time may say or do, but why he in his deep heart conceives God to be like. We tend to by a secret law of the soul to move toward our mental image of God. This is true not only of the individual Christian, but of the company of Christians that composes the church. Always the most revealing thing about the church is her idea of God, just as her most significant message is what she says about him or leaves unsaid. For her silence is often more eloquent than her speech. She can never escape the self-disclosure of her witness concerning God. Were we able to extract from any man a complete answer to the question, what comes into your mind when you think about God, we might predict with certainty the spiritual future of that man. Were we able to know exactly what our most influential leaders, religious leaders, think of God today, we might be able with some precision to foretell where the church will stand tomorrow. Without a doubt, the mightiest thought the mind can entertain is the thought of God, and the weightiest word in any language is its word for God. Thought and speech are God's gifts to create creatures made in his image. These are intimately associated with him and impossible apart from him. It is highly significant that the first word was the word, and the word was with God, and the word was God. We may speak because God spoke. In him, word and idea are indivisible. And that's where I'm going to end. But just, again, thinking about our view of God and how that affects our lives and how what we do. And another thing is also just there's very much a lacking of the fear of God, a holy fear that is, you know, even as Paul says, knowing the terror of the Lord, I persuade men. And so we're going to continue with that study, speaking of God's holiness. We want to put God back where he belongs. I mean, he always was there and he always will be there. And it doesn't matter what we think about God. He's always going to be holy. He's always going to be perfect. And but we want to think rightly about who God is so that our lives will reflect the glory of our God. God bless you.